Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, November 20th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Judge bans media cameras from Koberger hearings. Special prosecutor withdraws subpoena of Idaho Health and Welfare Director Dave Jeppesen over Attorney General Raul Labrador's investigation of community grant program allocations. Far-right Republican county committees in Idaho endorsed candidates in city races, but their candidates did not win in Idaho's larger cities. Sixth hunger strike of the year at the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma with 105 participants. And the Washington State University Board of Regents approves budgets and design plans for buildings on campus in Pullman. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. But first, world headlines from Feature Story News, the Pacifica Radio Network, and the Public News Service. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, this is the KRFP Evening Report. I'm Lee Robartis. The presiding judge in the quadruple murder trial of Brian Koberger, accused of the knife murders of four University of Idaho students a year ago, has ruled in favor of a defense request to remove media cameras from the courtroom during any future hearings. Judge John Judge says the court will provide a video feed of any proceedings via his YouTube page. Judge wrote, the media continues to zoom in on Brian Koberger rather than capture the court's entire proceedings. He also said the media filmed the defendant Koberger entering and exiting the courtroom in violation of his order to only film when the court is on the record. Judge wrote in his ruling today, it is the intense focus on Koberger and his every move, along with adverse headlines and news articles, that leads the court to conclude that continued photograph and video coverage inside the courtroom by the media should no longer be permitted. This step should help ensure Koberger's right to fair trial by an impartial jury and achieve proper administration of justice. Judge said live streams of court hearings will be available on his YouTube channel, which is named Judge John Judge. Judge wrote, this will help to alleviate the concerns raised by both the defense and the state, but at the same time will ensure the public still has access to see the proceedings for themselves if they cannot attend hearings in person. Judge also noted his concern that cameras would focus on documents on attorneys' tables in the courtroom and could make victims and witnesses vulnerable. 14 media outlets, including the Lewiston Tribune, Daily News, and the Spokesman Review, submitted motions arguing in favor of unlimited cameras in the courtroom. The special prosecutor in an investigation of the Idaho Health and Welfare Department withdrew his civil subpoenas last month in the case against Health and Welfare Director Dave Jeppesen, Deputy Director Jennifer Pelagi, and Self-Reliance Division Administrator Shane Leach. Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador, in his first months on the job, launched an investigation into allegations that the health department has awarded federal community partner grant funds to ineligible programs in 2020 and 2021. Jeppesen, Pelagi, and Leach had filed motions to stop the wide net investigation, and a judge set limits on what the attorney general could ask for. Fourth District Judge Lynn Norton in Boise disqualified Attorney General Raul Labrador from pursuing the demands because of a conflict of interest, and said he could appoint a special prosecutor to do so instead. Labrador's choice was Adams County Prosecutor Christopher Boyd, who notified the court on October 6th he was withdrawing the investigative demands, but did not give a reason why. Judge Norton then dismissed the case without prejudice, which means it could be refiled. Norton will decide later who pays attorney's fees. The Idaho Press reports Prosecutor Boyd said he could not comment because there is still a criminal investigation open into the issue. The co-chairs of the state's powerful Joint Finance Appropriations Committee backed Labrador's investigation, noting the legislature had stipulated federal after-school program funds could only be used for children between the ages of 5 and 13. The lawmakers were concerned the program money was used to administer programs that served children outside the designated age range. A legislative audit found 8 instances of the specified grants benefiting children outside the age range, and the Health and Welfare Department pushed back against the audit, saying they disagreed with all of the findings. During the early stages of the investigation, Attorney General Raul Labrador sent investigative demands to a number of nonprofits operating in Idaho, asking for large amounts of records. More than 30 nonprofits sued to quash the investigation or narrow its scope. Jeppesen announced his retirement as Health and Welfare Director last week, effective at the end of the year. He said he had faced a number of challenges in his role, but the challenges were not his reason for stepping away from the job. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has allocated the last chunk of the $79 million dedicated to improving the health of the Columbia River Basin in a 2021 congressional bill. Congress allocated the money in the bipartisan infrastructure law. The final $31 million will go towards Oregon tribes, state agencies, farmers, and ranchers for work to reduce toxic pollution in the basin. Democratic U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon said in a news release Thursday, "Our rivers and waterways are the lifeblood of our communities. If they are dirty and polluted, our homes, schools, and businesses are dirty and polluted." There are 16 federally recognized tribes in the 250,000-square-mile Columbia Basin, which includes the watersheds of large tributaries such as the Snake and Willamette Rivers. The Columbia Basin extends into 7 states, including Washington, Idaho, Oregon, and Wyoming. A number of species of fish are endangered due to both hydropower dams, which restrict fish passage, and toxic waste from agriculture, forestry, recreation, and hydroelectric stations. Some species of fish are unsafe for consumption. The Idaho Capital Sun reports the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde and the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation will receive $2 million each under the new allocation to reduce pollution in the tributaries near their lands. The Portland-based nonprofit Salmon Safe will get $6 million to continue with its growing network of farmers, ranchers, developers, and tribes who take voluntary measures to protect water quality. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality will get $6 million to reduce the amount of agricultural pesticides, mercury, and PFAS, often called forever chemicals, in the basin. And you're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Skyglow Solar, offering solar power systems installations on the Palouse and surrounding region. Information at skyglowsolar.com or contact Brian Ogle at 208-310-4545.
The immigrant human rights group La Resistancia says about 105 immigrants are on hunger strike at Immigration and Customs Enforcement's Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, protesting inhumane conditions at the center and their right not to be detained at all. The private company, the GEO Group, operates the detention center for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The University of Washington Center for Human Rights has documented medical neglect, sexual assault reports, and use of tear gas at what is one of the largest ICE detention centers in the U.S. In the 12-month period ending August 31st, 2022, the detention center had an average daily population of 374 detainees. However, the government pays GEO Group for 1,181 beds, no matter how many detainees there actually are at any given time. A Department of Homeland Security report in May says the maximum capacity at the Northwest Detention Center is 1,575. The Washington State Standard spoke to one detainee, Chidi Emmanuel Megwa, who said the food is the worst food on earth. Megwa said he is being detained for financial crimes he did not commit. The current hunger strike is the sixth by detainees this year. Those striking are demanding immediate release or immediate deportation if they already have final deportation orders. There was also a hunger strike involving 1,200 detainees at the detention center in 2014. University of Washington Center for Human Rights Director Angelina Snodgrass Godoy told the Washington State Standard she does not know of any long-term improvement to conditions because of a hunger strike in the past, although she said there have been modest gains, such as the addition of chicken to meals. Godoy says the hunger strikes are often the only way detainees can get the word out.
Washingtonians with kids and older parents in need of care are praising the peace of mind the state's new retirement savings program is providing them. Working, middle-aged people caring for kids and their parents are considered members of the sandwich generation. The WA Cares Fund will provide benefits so that people can pay for long-term care. Kristen Hyde says her father needs at-home care and would have benefited from the fund. She worries that without the fund, her pre-existing condition would have kept her from receiving coverage.
I even make a decent income, but I know that as a working mom with a kid in college, it's really impossible for me to set aside tens of thousands of dollars into a safety nest egg in case I need care someday.
Starting in 2026, Washingtonians will have access to up to $36,500 in benefits from the WA Cares Fund. Workers start automatically contributing a little more than a half of 1% of their paychecks into the fund in July 2023. Rivka Burstein Stern has two children and her parents live with her. She says she's lucky that her parents are able to support themselves.
It is scary to think how financially ruinous it can be if there's not support to give them the care that they need.
Dana Barnett has a child and parents who don't yet need care, but she says it's stressful to think about, and she's thankful the WA Cares Fund will one day help her.
I can just imagine it being so helpful, and it gives me a sense of relief just thinking about it being out there for myself and also for others in my community.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Did you notice what's coming up?
Yeah, the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and...
No, I mean on Tuesday the 28th.
Oh, you mean Giving Tuesday.
That's right.
I have a feeling you're going to tell me that this is the perfect time to donate to KRFP.
Even better. Donate between now and Tuesday, November 28th, and a generous donor will match your donation.
My whole donation?
The donor will match donations up to a total of $1,000. Can you think of a better, faster way to double your money?
What if I've never donated before?
Send your donation for the match.
What if I already donate?
Send your donation for the match.
How do I donate?
Just go to krfp.org and click the link for the Giving Tuesday Challenge Grant. You will be able to pay directly through PayPal or mail your check to 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843.
So, I go to krfp.org and click the link for the Giving Tuesday Challenge Grant if I want to pay through PayPal. Or, I can mail my check to 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843.
That's right.
So, are you going to donate?
I already have.
You talked me into it.
The Washington State University Board of Regents Friday approved the budget and design plan for the $9.4 million WSU Champions Center for Athletics at their two-day meeting in Vancouver. The athletic department says it has already received $6.9 million in gross cash contributions for the project, and they have received $2.5 million in pledges receivable over the next 3 years to build the center. The purpose of the center is to improve student athletes' academic growth and personal well-being. The building is expected to house centralized staff to deal with athletes' academic, mental health, nutritional, and professional development needs. WSU plans to begin construction of the building this winter on Cougar Way, where the athletics building now stands. The Regents also approved the design plan for the $105 million USDA Agriculture Research Services plant. The facility will be located on the site formerly occupied by Johnson Hall at the corner of Stadium Way and Wilson Road. Currently, WSU has 5 USDA research units on its Pullman campus. They include grain legume genetics and physiology, Northwest Sustainable Ag Ecosystems, germplasm introduction and testing, and animal disease. Congress allocated funding for the building to house the partnership programs. Also Friday, the Regents authorized a lease-to-purchase agreement for the WSU Institute for Northwest Energy Futures near the college's Tri-Cities campus. Incumbents John Spickelmeyer and Jim Kleberg came in first and second in the 8-way race for 3 open seats on the Lewiston City Council this month. The two won despite a lack of support from the Nez Perce County Republican Party Central Committee, which tried to impose ideological purity on those running in what are nonpartisan races. Spickelmeyer and Kleberg distinguished themselves as the candidates who refused to return questionnaires from the Nez Perce County Republican Party Central Committee on positions. It's a scenario that played out in at least 3 other larger Idaho cities on Election Day. The far-right Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee endorsed challengers vetted by the committee to replace incumbent Coeur d'Alene City Council members Christy Wood, Dan Gookin, and Dan English. Wood and Gookin won by the largest margins. They are conservative, but they don't align themselves with the far-right Central Committee, although Gookin is technically a member of it. In fact, they have been very critical of the Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee. Gookin said during the campaign the Central Committee's, quote, refusal to condemn white supremacy and those who associate with known white supremacists and racists is causing them a lot of internal strife. Incumbent Dan English, a former Democratic County clerk in Kootenai County, who has been called the Panhandle's last Democrat, had 50.8% of the vote against 2 challengers, Roger Garlock and Rob Knutson, in a 3-way race. Garlock had Central Committee endorsement from the Republican Party. A more moderate group called the North Idaho Republicans endorsed Wood, Gookin, and English. That group endorsed 14 candidates around the Panhandle this year, and 8 of them won. Also in Coeur d'Alene, 2 candidates for the school board, incumbent Heather Tenbrink and newcomer Jim McAndrew, won over Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee-endorsed candidates. In Bonneville County in southeastern Idaho, the county's Republican Party Central Committee endorsed 3 candidates in the Idaho Falls City Council races who lost by large margins. The winner in one race was incumbent Idaho Falls City Council member John Radford, who won with 71% of the vote against Don Howard. Kirk Larson won a seat on the council with 67% of the vote against Central Committee-endorsed Barbara Miller. In Idaho's largest city, Boise, former police chief Mike Masterson had endorsement from the far right and lost the mayor's race against first-term incumbent Lauren McClain, who had 55% of the vote. It's difficult to say if the results of various city and Coeur d'Alene school board votes indicate whether the tide is turning against the far right in Idaho, who have had a large number of electoral successes during the last 2 years, especially at the legislative level. City voters tend to care about nonpartisan issues such as infrastructure and development and are more likely to vote moderate and liberal. While the Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee's chosen candidates lost In the city of Coeur d'Alene, they had success in rural parts of the panhandle. 17 out of the 24 candidates they endorsed in the panhandle won their races November 7th.
A group of veterans is touting the national security benefits of the Inflation Reduction Act. The organization Elected Officials to Protect America says the law, passed by Congress in 2022, will decrease the country's dependence on foreign sources of energy with a $370 billion investment in clean energy. Army veteran and Beaverton Mayor Lacey Beattie says in wake of the region's devastating wildfires and heat dome, she helped push for protections for renters in Oregon.
Well, I'm very proud of that legislation. I'm very proud that the governor signed it, and I was very proud to build the coalition to do it. Imagine what a tenacious mayor could have done if I wasn't focusing on climate-related emergencies. Like, we could have been building more pipes and schools and infrastructure and bridges.
Beattie says the recent disasters in the state have underscored the importance of taking action on climate change. Alex Cornell Dehu is a Marine vet and former Maine State Representative. He's also president and co-founder of Elected Officials to Protect America. He points to the conflict in Ukraine as evidence of the importance of energy independence.
With the Inflation Reduction Act, it is part of the solution to decouple ourselves from this dependency on the source of energy in which autocratic nations primarily control. And that's the exciting thing about it. It's an amazing solution that's really tangible and a historic investment.
B says mayors like her will ensure funds from the Inflation Reduction Act go to places that do the most good to fight climate change.
We can be trusted by the president to deliver on the ground. So that's why you see so many mayors excited about the Inflation Reduction Act, because we know how to put money to work right away.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The number of people with disabilities in the workforce rose 2 percentage points last year to 21%, still far behind the 65% of workers without disabilities. Tori Atkins, Chief Human Resources Officer for Murdoch's Ranch and Home Supply, which has 7 stores in Wyoming, says the biggest barrier when hiring people with intellectual, developmental, or physical disabilities is taking that first step.
It does take someone as a leader to be open. I think that probably is one of the first sort of hurdles that someone needs to get over. It's not really about policies and laws and procedures.
More companies are looking to this largely untapped source of talent to fill millions of jobs and diversify their workforce. A Walgreens distribution center created thousands of full-time jobs for people with disabilities without sacrificing productivity or profits. Walgreens expanded its same jobs and same pay as everyone else mandate to other locations and has shared the model with 400 other businesses. Instead of asking what kind of jobs are good for people with disabilities, successful employers say the first question should be, where do you have hiring opportunities and what does that job require? Because there are people with disabilities who can do it. Atkins says it's also important when onboarding new staff to appoint a mentor.
Make sure that there is someone who goes the extra mile to build that trusting relationship and is providing them direction and support to achieve the tasks that they've been assigned.
Atkins says workers with disabilities bring a strong sense of positivity and ownership to their work, which is contagious and has created a culture of teamwork among colleagues with different abilities. And when workers feel valued, seen, and enjoy the people they work with, they tend to stick around.
In the locations where we've hired folks with disabilities, that positivity and that connection that gets built with those individuals who join the team definitely has a positive impact on retention.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. This is Eric Galatis for the Wyoming News Service.
We have a correction from a report on vaccinations aired on Friday's Evening Report and today's Morning Mix, in which we incorrectly reported the number of COVID deaths in the U.S. per week. The current number of COVID deaths per week in the U.S. is around 1,200. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, it's calling for partly cloudy tonight and tomorrow. Low 29, high 45. 30% chance of rain Tuesday night, mainly after 4 a.m. Increasing clouds, low 33. On Wednesday, 60% chance of rain, mainly after 10 a.m. Snow level 5,000 feet, cloudy, high 42. On Wednesday night, 40% chance of precipitation, a chance of rain and snow before 10 p.m. Then a chance of rain, patchy fog before 2 a.m., patchy freezing fog after 2 a.m., snow level 4,500 feet, lowering to 3,600 feet after midnight. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, low 29. Little or no snow accumulation expected. Thanksgiving Day, 30% chance of rain and snow. Partly cloudy Thursday night, low 23, and mostly clear Friday through Saturday, highs 37, low 20. Current temperature is 35 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming there, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Also on the front page of the website, there is a link for the matching fund until Giving Tuesday, the 28th. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Coming up next, Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And then music begins at 7:30 with Zach Dunoir on the air. And at 9 o'clock, Chia Pet will play music for you till 11. At 11 o'clock till 1 a.m., syndicated world music with the Motherland Influence. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by Hunga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hunga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram. KRFP programming is also sponsored by
Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine, such as Euros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh, located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.